Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka, where it's 35 degrees, intermittent snow with some rain in the forecast later today. It's Monday, January 23rd, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. KCAW is awaiting official confirmation of news that Sitka Magistrate Bruce Horton has died. Horton was reportedly fatally injured in a fall at his home last Friday afternoon while doing repairs. Horton graduated from the University of Puget Sound Law School in 1979. He had practiced law in Alaska for almost 24 years. Raven News will provide additional details as they become available. Hikers around Sitka were warned to use extra caution this weekend. Sitka Mountain Rescue issued an avalanche advisory Friday afternoon. Mountain Rescue Captain Don Cluding says the advisory came from extreme cold in the last week, coupled with high winds in the forecast for the weekend. He says slopes facing southwest and northwest were of particular concern.
We're looking at Verstovia Bowl, where people like to snowboard. We're looking at Harbor Mountain Bowl, which is a similar aspect. We're looking at Bear Mountain, you know, up the Beaver Lake route, where people like to snowboard. All of those slopes are currently being wind-loaded.
Dry, unstable snow was blown onto those faces, and Cluding says they've already seen some avalanche activity.
There was a pretty significant slide that came down off of Bear Mountain in the last 24 hours, and it actually deposited snow across Green Lake Road. And, you know, the powder blast actually went through and out into, salt water.
The volunteer rescue team says on its Facebook page that slide paths along Green Lake Road and Blue Lake Road should be avoided. Cluding says Sitka Mountain Rescue periodically issues avalanche advisories, although not often.
You know, we're certainly not saying that they shouldn't go out, but we're saying if they do go out, we want them to be aware that there's some slope aspects that could be particularly hazardous, and if they're going to be snowboarding or snow machining on those slopes, that they should be taking all the precautions, digging snow pits and evaluating it before they throw themselves out there.
Cluding says anyone heading into the backcountry should take avalanche transceivers, probes, and shovels. He also urges hikers to follow basic safety tips, such as not hiking alone and telling someone back in town where you're going and how long you'll be out. You can link to Sitka Mountain Rescue's Facebook page through our website, kcaw.org. The State Ferry Lakati ran into high winds and rough seas north of Juneau on Friday, forcing it to turn around and head back to the Auk Bay Ferry Terminal. State Marine Highway Chief Captain Mike Newsell says the Lakati was in a narrow channel when the decision was made to head back, so instead of turning around in the channel, the Masters decided to do it in Berners Bay.
After they made the decision, hey, we're going back, they did intentionally have to steam further north in order to get to a wider part of the channel to make the turnaround to come back south. They didn't want to do that in a narrow channel.
The Lakati was back in Juneau by 12:30 Friday afternoon. Newsell says the captain reported 75-knot winds and 12-foot seas. Newsell says it's up to individual ferry captains to decide when to brave rough seas.
Really, it's the master's discretion. I know we have limits on our fast vehicle ferries because they're a little more weather sensitive than the larger steel-hulled displacement ships, which are a little bit more tolerant to the weather. But as usual, safety dictates first, and if the master determines it's not safe to continue, he has my full backing to turn around and come back.
Newsell says all passengers were rebooked for Sunday. The state's Board of Fish has rejected a proposal to increase the sea cucumber harvest. The idea was put forward by a dive fisheries group concerned over Southeast's expanding population of sea otters. The group had hopes of harvesting more of the valuable bottom dwellers before they're decimated by the otters. As Joe Vicnicki reports, the decision followed a presentation to the board about the marine mammals and their effects on the region.
The board heard an hour-long presentation about the latest research on Southeast sea otters, which are now estimated to total 20,000. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service marine mammal research biologist Verena Gill says the population is increasing at 4% annually in northern Southeast. That number is 12% in the southern part of the panhandle. Gill says otters haven't increased their range in the northern part of the region.
But they have increased their range in southern Southeast Alaska, and primarily that is that the main areas are around Kuyu Island and Kupriana, around Totem Bay and around the Cake area, and then in the south around the Barrier Islands.
The animals once blanketed the region but were hunted to near extinction by the late 19th and early 20th century with the fur trade. The state reintroduced them to southeast waters in the 1960s, and they've since thrived. Researchers are studying the otter's diet, and they're tracking some individual animals' movements. And they're finding that the predators are impacting shellfish, sea cucumbers, and other creatures caught by commercial fishermen. The dive fleet and crabbers have raised concerns about the issue for years. They worry the animals will eventually put them out of business. But otters could have a variety of other effects on the ecosystem, according to Ginny Eckert, a fisheries professor with the University of Alaska Fairbanks.
We think there could be positive impacts of them on other fisheries, potentially herring, rockfish, and salmon. And the reason for that is because the otters help the kelp by eating urchins. And so there's more kelp now in areas where there are otters. That's not been shown, but we'd like to examine that.
Commercial divers are anxious to see some action taken on the issue now. They submitted a proposal to the board that would have allowed for an increased harvest of sea cucumbers to account for otter predation. Phil Doherty is a former fish and game biologist and now works for the Southeast Alaska Regional Dive Fisheries Association.
Look at different ways that we can go in there and perhaps harvest at a little bit of a different harvest rate, or front load some of the harvest before they're gone. We are not saving these animals, be it sea cucumbers, gooey ducks, sea urchins, or Dungeness crab. We are not saving them for anything. And so the board will have to have that discussion. Do we want to try and harvest at a little bit higher rate, a little bit more now, and then see what happens a few years down the road? We know what's going to happen a few years down the road. They're not going to be there, regardless if we harvest or not.
The Board of Fish took up that proposal the following day. Board member John Jensen of Petersburg said he liked the concept.
I believe we should feed people before we feed sea otters. They're going to end up eating them all anyway, but if they keep pulling at the rate they are. I wouldn't know if I'd support this proposal or not, but I just think that humans should be treated with a little bit more, should have a little bit more priority than sea otters, Mr. Chair.
But Jensen, a commercial fisherman and skiff rental business owner, was the only member who expressed support for the idea. Board Chair Carl Johnstone, a retired judge from Anchorage, opposed it.
To do so would reject the constitutional mandate to manage for sustained yield for the maximum benefit of the people. I understand feeding people rather than sea otters, but it would place a higher value on the gooey duck and the sea cucumber than the sea otter. And who are we to place that value at this time? It would put a higher value on money rather than on a marine mammal. But who are we to place that value, at least in my opinion?
The board voted down the dive proposal with only Jensen supporting it. It's possible the cucumber fishery could see some changes still in the future. Under a different proposal from the state, the Department of Fish and Game suggested a variable harvest rate based on the estimated cuke numbers in different parts of the region. That would have allowed for no fishing in areas with depressed cucumber numbers and a higher harvest in areas with strong stocks. Fish and Game eventually withdrew support for that proposal, and the board took no action on it. But the department's Kyle Hebert said they wanted to look for other solutions.
We would like to improve upon the harvest rate approach that we use now. We'd like to try to determine if there's a better way to deal with sea otter areas, impacted areas, and so we would like to work with SART for more and see if we can come up with something.
Some of the discussion also focused on the possibilities for increased hunting of otters by Alaska Natives. The animals are protected by federal law, but it does allow natives to harvest them for creation of handicrafts. There's federal legislation proposed that would loosen restrictions on the native commercial use of whole otter pelts. An estimated 600 otters have been killed in Southeast during each of the past 2 years. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
The federal coordinator for the Alaska Natural Gas Transportation Project says Alaskans need to stop thinking of natural gas as the next oil. Larry Persily says the difference between the gas that would go into a line from the North Slope and the oil currently filling the Trans-Alaska pipeline is that the state needs a natural gas project more than producers or world markets need Alaska's gas.
We need the gas line for the decades of affordable fuel it's going to provide to Alaskans. Natural gas for rail belt communities, hopefully propane for everyone else. We need to accept that we need a line for the jobs, for the tens of billions of dollars in investment, that it will bring along, and for the additional barrels of oil it will put into taps that will accompany all that exploration and development for gas. You know, after all those good things, there'll be some tax and royalty dollars too, not nearly as much as oil, but it will be a thick icing on the sweet cake.
Right now, Persily says economics and Alaska politics are standing in the way of a line being built. When the legislature passed the Alaska Gas Line Inducement Act in 2007, the idea was that North Slope natural gas would be sold in the continental United States. But with cheap and plentiful reserves of shale gas now available in the lower 48, some state leaders, including Governor Sean Parnell, have decided to refocus efforts on exporting liquefied natural gas to the Pacific Rim. Persily says just because the bottom fell out of the U.S. market doesn't mean Alaska will suddenly be able to export its gas. For one thing, there's just as much competition in Asia as there is domestically. For another, there are certain restrictions placed on exports. Persily says it's time for state leaders to decide the best way to get Alaska's vast supply of natural gas to market. The problem is that those same leaders keep falling in love with different projects.
I'm sort of surprised we don't have a collective case of sexually transmitted disease because we've hopped in and out of bed with our favorite project over the decades so many times.
Persily dismisses talk that Alaska has missed its window of opportunity as far as gas is concerned. He says the market is constantly evolving and demand for Alaska gas will be realized one day. Persily spoke last Thursday to the Juneau World Affairs Council. Zone weather forecast today for Sitka and PA calls for snow and rain showers, snow accumulation up to 1 inch, highs around 37, south winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow, rain mixing with snow in the morning, snow accumulation up to 1 inch. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.